Let us see what the future holds.
Welcome back to What the Future Holds, a Star Trek Discovery podcast. It's been a minute, and we're excited to be back and talk about more new episodes of Discovery Season 4. I am one of three. I am Brandi Jekyll, and with me, as they almost always are, save one time, two of three. Which one was two of three?
Chris is two of three.
Chris is two of three. I need to write this shit down.
Or just remember it.
Two of three. Yeah, the thing is that I can't remember things anymore. My hard drive is full, and there are no further external hard drive extensions that I can plug in.
You go through and delete all your unnecessary memories.
If
your
only.
USBs are dead.
If only. You know, there's stuff in there like a John Keats poem that I shouted at Dave today. And 16 stanzas of the Rime of the Ancient Mariner that I am never going to need again. You know, there's all of that stuff. Anyway, Chris.
Hi.
Welcome back to your hometown. You've been gone a while.
Yeah.
How are you?
I'm good. When did season 4 premiere? What was the date?
November 18th.
So this is the first episode that I'm actually recording in my home for this season. Because I've been traveling all over the place.
Whoa.
Yeah, you have been traveling all over the place.
So far for season 4, I have recorded episodes in South Carolina, New York City, Texas, and Louisiana, and Jersey. So 5 states so far, and there will be more. There will be more.
There will be more.
Yeah. There will be more.
Stay tuned, listeners.
Coming to a state near you.
I'm not sure what state will be next week, but it will be another one.
Excellent. Well, we're glad to have you here, of course, because it's just not as fun without you ever.
I'm glad to be here.
We're happy. And now, of course, three of three, my wonderful husband, Dave. Dave, how you doing?
I'm drowning in Trek. We've got so much of it.
We really do. I should explain that yesterday we received the first three episode screeners for Star Trek Picard Season 2.
Go fuck yourself. I hate you.
Do you know how long I have to keep this shit secret? Do not envy me.
This is a long... You got them
do
way
not.
Ahead.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
They usually do that for a season premiere. They do like two and a half weeks out, and they give you three episodes. And so we watched two of the three, and we can say nothing.
Two of three. That's Chris.
Hey.
Yes. Two of three. So,
oh my God, I am so envious right now.
The only thing I can say, and it's something I've already said and it's on record, is John DeLancey is wicked hot with a goatee. So there we are.
You have seen that.
Yeah. Anywho, we're here to talk about episode...
I want to say seven.
Eight. I think it's eight. It's episode eight. Yes, episode eight of Star Trek Discovery. Wow, I am so prepared, y'all. Called All In. And the minute I saw this title, I'm like, oh boy, we're going to have gambling. It's going to be a card game. I was not wrong.
Yep.
Yeah, they were basically playing an alien version of Texas Hold'em. Anyway.
And did card designs get worse over time?
No, just
they
weird.
Were kind of hard to read as playing cards. You'd think they'd simplify and make them easier to read rather than harder.
But again, these are not playing cards from Earth.
Yeah.
Right.
And so,
but they were designed very similarly.
In some ways, yes. Yeah. And in some ways, no. So, yeah, I just let stuff like that go because it can just be chalked up to different cultures.
Yeah, I just have this kind of graphic design part of me that's like, oh, that's odd. It's an odd design for the cards.
I didn't even think about it for a second.
I didn't really think about it either, except you see two cards that are matching and you know, oh, that's important.
Right.
You know, that's generally important.
He's got a pair game, or a flush, maybe?
Or is this a straight? I don't know.
Yeah.
Before we do that, we get a nice long recap of stuff that has happened up until now. We basically pick up almost directly after the events of the last episode with Rilik really just... given hell to both Vance and Burnham about
well, she should.
The stuff. Yeah, and well, she should. Well, the thing is, how could you not see this coming? Well, did you see it coming, really? I mean, obviously you didn't, but that's what you have Vance and Burnham for, right?
Well, as soon as Tarka walked in a room, I was like, oh, I don't trust him. Mm-hmm. So I think I could see it coming.
Well, yes, we could see it coming, but they had, I guess, more faith in Tarka's higher nature, which I don't think he has.
I don't see it. And I do not see it.
We will discuss that later, because I have many thoughts, as do you, and it looks like you do, Chris. Yes.
Now, let's discuss it now and derail everything.
Okay. No. Okay, let's do it. I'm fine. I'm fine. Really, honestly, we can do whatever we want. It's our podcast. We do not have to go linearly through this episode.
Well, so. I went back and listened to the last couple episodes, and I was like, oh, we really veered. There was like a major veer off course, and then we went around in circles and around in circles.
Oh, yes.
And Brandy finally had to like lay down the law and get us back on track. So I'm trying to be mindful of form and keeping things in order and not interrupting, because I noticed also that I've done that a lot. Y'all are guilty of it, too. But, well, Brandy,
We all do it. We all interrupt each other. That's the nature of being on a Zoom call, because we're in different places.
That's fair.
So that's not a big deal to me. As far as linear, we're not going to go through the episode exactly linearly, beat for beat.
Also,
we never do.
I can speak for at least two of us here in saying that our brain doesn't really work that way a lot of the time.
Mm-hmm. And there's a value that comes with talking about a topic when it comes up in conversation. Yeah. That way we won't forget it later.
Okay, well, I don't see how we could forget Tarka, but now that we're here, let's just go ahead. Let's get into it. You're going to hear my chair squeak as I adjusted my butt so I can get comfortable. She's settling in. I don't know who Tarka thinks he's fooling, but frankly, if he thinks his loss justifies what is possibly going to mean the death of millions, if not more, of innocent people because of what they're going to do to the DMA to destroy it. I don't care what your loss is, buddy. There is no loss that is worth that. So I don't care who the fuck you lost or how you feel about it, because everybody's lost someone. Everyone on Discovery has lost someone. They lost their entire lives coming to the future so you could tool around being a dick, Tarka. But you don't know that, do you? You don't think about that for an entire second, because you are the most important thing in the universe. So, once again, I say, fuck off, Tarka. That's how I feel.
So you think there's hope for him?
No. I don't.
Run across several people defending Tarka or suspecting that he's in the right.
Really?
And I'm like, where are they seeing this? The only thing I can see is maybe they relate to him because he's like a white dude and therefore must be right some reason. But the fact that he's so rude, that he has this inflated ego, that he hijacks conversations, that he insults Saru for no reason, that he risks the Discovery when he doesn't have to, everything is to be used or manipulated. I don't even think or possibly know that he told Book the truth, but just told Book what he needed to know to get him to be a pilot for the spore drive. There's no way I trust Tarka at all with any of it. In fact, I'm beginning to suspect whatever species 10C is, I think he might be one of
them. That's what I think.
I think and he's trying to get back at them or to them.
I've been thinking for the last couple weeks that he bears some responsibility in some way.
He's way too familiar with the DMA and what it is and how it works. He created a model from what? From where? How?
Well,
he,
from just Stamets' information. That's
yeah,
how.
But yeah, it was just energy, but he created this thing that was able to mimic it? What if he already had that knowledge previously?
That's certainly a possibility. I know that he knows. I know that he knows more than he's telling. Way more than he's telling. And he is just manipulating everybody he can. I do love how fast Awosha can pegged him.
Yes.
And the fact that he said to her face, you know, if you knew the weight of my loss, you would understand why I have to do this, or whatever he said exactly. And just the look in her eyes, I've seen it twice, but I need to go back and really look at her facial expression when he says that, if we get a good look at her facial expression, because it feels to me like she's going, are you fucking kidding me? You're going to talk to me about loss.
And the way she just kept needling him.
Mm-hmm. And he didn't even have to say a word.
Until, you know, she scratched the skin.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, he's so dismissive. It's like, yeah, you don't matter to me. I'm super smart. I don't care about you. And then just that one poke, it's like, and he crumples.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's what happens to egos. The bigger the ego, the more fragile mm-hmm. thing it's protecting.
Oh, yeah, he's totally fragile. And so that's why he's dangerous.
Yeah.
A white man being fragile. What mm-hmm. what a coincidence.
I resent that.
I know you
do. I resemble that.
Just kidding. Yeah. Well, I'm present company accepted, of course, because mm. we have a better grasp on who we are as people. And
I have had moments where I was incredibly thin-skinned and fragile, of course. But
oh, yeah.
Everybody does. We all do. But it depends on the source, and it depends on what it's about.
Yeah.
When it's a fucking egomaniac like Tarka, I just don't care about his feelings at all. At all.
I think that, you know, we saw some cracks in the relationship between Book and Tarka in this episode, obviously.
Yeah. Yes.
Especially after the game, when he went back.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that, definitely think that there's going to be a come to Jesus moment with Book when it comes to Tarka. And I think it's coming very soon. Yeah, I just think maybe Book is going to learn more about Tarka. And then there's going to be something that's going to, you know, there's going to be the straw that breaks the camel's back when it comes to Book and his perception of Tarka. And I'm looking forward to that when it happens, if that's what happens.
I am hoping that happens, but I am not 100% sure that they are going to stop Tarka from destroying the DMA. I am not 100% sure.
Yeah, Discovery is one of those series that big disasters can and do happen.
And I've had some Voyager friends point out that Boromite is something that the Borg were trying to find more of, so that they could create Omega particles.
Oh.
I don't think it's a coincidence that Species 10C has a dredge going through another galaxy mining Boromite.
Hmm.
That's not a coincidence. I'm not saying that they're Borg in there. I'm saying what they're doing is far beyond even this 3189, 3190? How many years have they been there? I don't even know now. So that's beyond the comprehension and technology of what they're doing in that century. So what are they? We don't know, but
it's very much a reflection of our modern world with how we pollute our environment mm-hmm. in favor of energy, that we drill for oil and or fracking and all these things that will hurt certain people, like running a pipeline through native land, because the energy is more important than people, and mm-hmm. that they're harvesting this Boromite to create all this energy so they can sustain themselves, but they don't seem to care where they send their dredge, which is destroying planets.
Yeah, they don't care at all. They probably see the races of this galaxy much like we look at ants.
Yeah.
Thinking that we are just lower life forms is my guess, because they are extremely advanced technologically. Obviously. To be honest, they terrify me because I don't know what they are. I don't know what their goal is, but I don't think that they are in any way going to be benevolent.
It is also frightening that the thing everybody assumed was a weapon is just a tool, mm-hmm. just something that's harvesting. And how destructive are their weapons then?
Okay, it's Boronite, not Boromite. Sorry, guys.
Boronite.
I thought I was saying it wrong. Yeah, it's a rare mineral oil used in the synthesis of omega molecules. The Borg were able to synthesize a single omega molecule using a quantity of Boronite, but they were unable to repeat the experiment as they never found another source of the ore.
Boronite reminds me of something we both realized about Tarka is that symbol on his forehead that looks like it's an upside down crescent moon kind
of. It looks like a big staple in his forehead.
Yeah, it looks like that. It also looks like he's a member of the Negaverse from Sailor Moon.
Then so, I laughed and laughed and laughed.
It's like, of course he's a villain. He's a part of the Negaverse.
Well, actually, as it turns out, okay, the four villains, Dave, that were in from the Negaverse, which are Jadeite and Malachite and all those guys, they actually were originally Prince Darian, when he was back when he was a prince on Earth. Anyway, doesn't matter. But they were his confidants. So right. That they were actually from his court and were turned to evil. So yeah, we just started calling him Tarkite because he's from the Negaverse. All the Sailor Moon fans will get it. All right. Do we have any other bitching we want to do about Tarka?
I think. I covered up. He's just a bully, and that's something you pointed out early on.
Mm-hmm. He's a bully.
And once you realize that, it's like, yeah, he just bullies people around, and he thinks he's better than everyone around him, and he's horrible. And I can't see him being justified in his actions at any time.
No, I agree. So, yeah, and another friend brought up to me, so did Rilik just disregard Regulation 619? Which is a captain who is emotionally compromised due to an association with someone and cannot be counted on to fulfill their mission as ordered, should immediately step down from being captain. And my response to that was, how do you know Regulation 619 still exists?
And does Michael seem emotionally too emotionally compromised? No, I don't think so.
She's not. Yeah, she's upset. Yeah, she didn't see this coming, and she's angry and she's hurt. But that is not going to stop her from doing her job.
She even said, "I will be one of the tools that they use to come and get you." You know, she knows. Mm-hmm. She's like,
"Yeah."
It's even when she was she had no rank. She was locked up for life, and she was still saying, "You know, it is by Starfleet that I Starfleet Federation Starfleet values that I live, and by them I will surely die." You know.
No matter what is going on with her personal life or her feeling, she is going to get the job done. Because guess what? That's what women do. We have emotional conflicts all the time. We still get our shit done because it needs to be done. That's how we do. That's just how women are. They're expected to just do this. And it's kind of like, fuck your feelings, lady. Oh, yeah? Well, guess what? I can still be emotional and get everything done that I need to do. Thank you very much. So anyone who brings that up, I'm going to just be like, sexist much?
Yeah. Rilik did reassign her, so to speak, but Michael found a loophole by going to where Federation couldn't cover.
And as if Rilik, she should have known. Like, obviously, yeah. She brought Michael in twice to do that. Once with the Vulcans and once with everybody for the vote. She brought Michael in to make the exceptions, to find the loopholes. And, she has used Michael to do that. So it's not surprising. Yep. It should not be surprising to her that that's what she did.
That wasn't what she was surprised about. What she was surprised about is that Michael had A, found book, and B, put a tracker on the Isolinian.
Oh yeah, when she said that, I was like, hell yeah, you did.
Yeah, it's kind of reminiscent of that recent episode of Prodigy.
Well, it's funny.
First contact. Yeah.
The funny thing is that when you watch it, when she's the initial scene where she goes in to verify the quality of the Isolinian, she's doing it with her right hand, and you can see her. The way she puts her finger on the back of it. She does that with her right hand. When they're showing us the reminiscence of it, either the frame got flipped or she's doing it with her left hand.
Oh, editing error.
Uh-huh. Brandy notices these things.
Yeah, I noticed that too.
Yeah.
It's like, what doesn't she do? Well, I noticed it on the second watch. I didn't notice it on the first one.
Yeah, I did on the first one, too, because I was watching, because I was like, there's a reason she wants to look at this stuff, and I didn't figure out why at the time. And, of course, when she revealed it, I'm like, well, duh. But I just thought, well, the reminiscing, that's not the side she was on. That's not the side she touched it with. But, you know, same, it's happened before, like in If Memory Serves, there is a frame that definitely got flipped because Spock's hair is not parted on that side. Mm. So it's just one of those weird things where you're just like, do you do this to just see if people are paying attention? Mm-hmm. Or did nobody else notice that the frame was suddenly backwards?
Yeah, it's weird they even chose to flip it, because why?
Yeah, it's just odd.
Unless they just, you know, one was filmed as a far away shot and one was a close-up and they forgot which hand was which.
This frame that was flipped in, if memory serves, it's very obvious that it's flipped because it's not just Spock's hair. It's the entire room, because there are slanty bits to the ceiling and they're facing the other direction. That's not a mistake in filming from a different angle. That is a mistake from having that sequence flipped for some reason.
I could see that if you're recording on film, but if you're recording digitally.
And it's digitally. That's what I don't get. It's like, why? Yeah.
That's where you'd have to purposefully flip it.
That's like the when scene. Picard is looking at the Locutus picture in the first episode in Remembrance, and it's like, wait, what side? Wait a minute, the prosthetic was not on that. Wait a minute, but if I look, if I'm on this side of the desk, I'm seeing the actual. I don't know. It was weird.
I agree with you on that one, because I was just like, I don't remember it being on that side. Huh. Okay. But anyway, so weird, 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 wild stuff. But
what's the name of the big gangster guy in charge?
Maz. Every time they said it, it sounded like they said boss. So it was.
Well, they might have said like boss more than once, but and I remember looking at the subtitles, and I know it was M-A-Z. So whether you say Maz or Maz,
I kept thinking Baz Luhrmann.
Yeah.
But I was like,
it just sounded like okay, boss.
The way that they revealed that character, it felt important to me, like. I was like, is this an actor that we know or something?
Well, people pointed out he looks like something out of Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Oh, he does.
Looks like a demon.
He looks like when Giles turned into a demon.
Yeah.
Little bit. Spoiler. And see, the thing is that for a while, there hasn't been any information on this episode as far as IMDb. And so finally, we have some information. Not enough. Not listing the guest stars.
Oh,
that
wow.
is not helpful.
Well, I got some major vibes out of this episode. I got, obviously, Free Cloud City vibes and Bajazel and all that stuff. And then and then of course, the poker game. We know what that reminds us of. But I was thinking of Gambit also, part one and part two. Which I think is one of the most overlooked Star Trek Next Generation two-parters, and I love it so much because Picard goes down and goes, you know, he acts as a, like he's a traitor or a thug or whatever on the other ship, and then they go down to the thing, and it just reminded me of that. Do you remember Gambit?
I need more than he pretends to be a thug and goes down to the thing. There are a lot of Next Generation episodes.
I love Gambit.
Let me look it up, and then I will read a synopsis, and I will probably be able to bring it up in my brain.
For me, it's Gambit and Descent are the top two-parters. Not even Iborg for me. I'm sorry, not Iborg. Best of Both Worlds.
Best of Both Worlds pisses me off.
I know.
Not for just the two-parter, but because the second half was so completely forgettable.
Yeah. It was all about the cliffhanger. That's the whole thing. Yeah. It's just about the cliffhanger.
Do you remember what season Gambit was in?
I think
in?
Six.
Cool.
Or seven.
Right. Maybe. Wow, Aquiel was that late?
Which I also really like and nobody likes.
It's basically the thing.
It is.
But not.
Fourth and fifth episodes of the seventh season, Gambit.
There we go.
Oh, Robin Curtis is in it. So they investigate Picard's whereabouts in a musty bar, describing him as a smooth-headed human. That's how it starts. They go to the bar looking for him. Anyway,
right.
It's not an Next Gen episode, but this episode gave me major Gambit vibes.
Sure. Yes.
It's a tropey episode.
Yeah.
Not only is they have the card game, the high stakes card game, but they also have the underground fighting ring. And it felt like if you're like a dungeon master running a D&D campaign, every once in a while you do like a filler thing between like major stories. It felt kind of like that, like you go into a tavern and they have this underground fighting ring and this gambling thing. You do like a little side quest. It was kind of side questy.
Yeah, but at the same time, we got some really important details, like the whole Boromite is and what the DMA actually is. And Book has crossed a bridge he may not be able to come back from. And I do like the serpent disguise of the barge. Like, it's an actual barge, like, floating on water.
Speaking of a D&D campaign, I had this desert village that was disguised as a purple worm. And it's that same kind of thing of having this dangerous creature that everybody would want to avoid, but it's actually an illusion that you go through there and ta-da.
Yeah.
You know, you find your secret base or whatever.
Not unlike Talos IV.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Where it looks like it's a singularity and you go in and it's a planet.
That's their defense system.
Yeah.
You know. Besides that, it's been ruled off limits. The barge, I liked that whole sequence when they were flying in and they go right down the gullet of the sea monster and it's the barge. And I liked why she brought Awoshukun. I liked the reason for that.
She took my breath away this episode. Oyen
everybody
Aladejo.
Saw her dimples when she smiled, I think everybody's fallen in love with her.
I mean,
I already was.
Yeah, I've loved her since the first time we saw her, but like, I didn't realize that she was from Nigeria, but like, there was just something about the way, and this is going back to what you were talking about, when she was communicating with Tarka, she was obviously reading him, and there was, you know, she triggered him in a way that really made him fight back or bite back or whatever, but there was such a genuine appealing to his, quote, humanity. Like, she was, it wasn't just that she was reading or psychoanalyzing him, because that she was, but she was also really trying to connect.
Well, there's a grace to Awoshukun.
And and she just, I'm like, I think she's phenomenal. I just think, I already respected the actor, but like, after that scene, and actually all of her in this episode, I was just like, this is a killer actor. Like, I just love her so much.
Agreed. Let's just stay on Awoshukun for a while, because I have some fun things to say. I've seen her dimples before, and I can't remember exactly when that I've seen them before, but I'm pretty sure it was the season finale of season 3 when she came back and Detmer was so excited that she wasn't dead and they were going to embrace. I'm pretty sure that's when I saw her dimples, but I've seen them before. I've seen her smile before, but when they first walk in to the Den of Iniquity, she's immediately bumped into, roughly, by that guy that she fights in the ring, and they don't even apologize or acknowledge that she exists. And I'm like, that's going to come into play later. I was not disappointed, because when she decides she's going to get in the ring with him, I thought, okay, she knows nothing about this guy. This guy is much bigger than she is. She is going to play him. She is going to learn his moves, learn how he fights, and she's going to drive up the money until they have enough. And then she's going to lay him out like the little bitch he is. And that's exactly what she did.
It was a pretty risky maneuver, because they could at any time have not agreed to a rematch. So it's fortunate that they did.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't think they had anybody else that was challenging at the time.
Yeah.
So, plus, you know, he's just like, sure, I'll make more money off of you. I mean, he was just thinking he was going to win more money. And, of course, that is not what happened. And just quickly, the very deadpan waitress or whatever who came with the tray of money and says all of this, where everyone's a winner.
I
Do you want
her.
A bag? Because there's more.
Everyone's a winner. I was like, this, I want to see that. I want to see that actor's audition, because I bet she read it just like that in the audition. They were like, you're the one. Yes.
Yes. She was the one. But yeah, I knew that everything that Owo was doing was calculated. Every move she made in the ring was calculated to figure out how he was going to do it, what he was going to do, so that she could take him down.
I was genuinely worried.
Yeah, I actually wasn't. I'm like, no, she got this. She said she's got this. She's got this. I believe her.
Well, there's certain martial arts, particularly in the soft style, that use an opponent's strength and size against them. And Wing Chun, which is a very popular form of Kung Fu that kind of formed the basis of what Bruce Lee kind of broke down and reassembled and just took like the basic rawness from to create Jeet Kune Do. It's... That's kind of the Wing Chun style, is it's often practiced by women because of the smaller size, and it focuses on speed and counterattacking, you know, to defend as you attack. So yeah, it makes sense that she could defeat somebody larger than her if she's just the better fighter.
And the strategy, you know, getting your ass kicked twice, and then that gives you the experience to figure out what this dude does and what he doesn't do.
Know what his weaknesses are and exploit them.
Yeah, he's just a big oaf. That's all he is. He
has
no
finesse. Basically rope-a-doped him.
Yeah, oh, she absolutely rope-a-doped him. And I love that the first move she makes is a dick punch.
Oh my God, I know. I was like, oh, she's fighting dirty.
Yeah, she's going for the legs and the lower body. No.
Yeah, that's what you go. If it's a larger opponent, you attack the legs.
Mm-hmm. She does throat punch him, though, which I appreciated because, you know, I'm a huge proponent of throat punching.
I mean, it's...
Especially when you're facing a larger opponent.
It's effective.
Yeah. The relationship between her and Michael, I mean, it was great in the shuttlecraft. Mm. Like, it was very touching. And I like how she got defensive about, oh, I told Saru. She's like, no, it's not about that. I apologize to Mr. Saru. I was way out of line, blah, blah, blah. I like that there's that protocol professionalism first. And then Michael's like, no, this is about me seeing something more in you that you need to, you know, that needs to be utilized, that you're experienced, that you are ready for. Mm-hmm. And then like the forehead touching before. Mm-hmm.
Yes, two that times. They do multiple
oh,
times.
My God. Mm-hmm. Yep. Their relationship, I don't think I've ever seen them interact closely before.
Yep.
And it was so touching. I loved it. I loved it so much. I'd love to see Michael take that role with other members of the crew, especially another black woman. And I just thought it was absolutely beautiful. It's great. Yeah.
It was really important to have two black women being strong, but in different ways.
Yeah, I'm getting goosebumps
in this episode.
Now.
I know, right? We need more of that. I'm so glad that Awoshikun was the one to do that. You know, she could have taken anyone. She could have taken a guy. She could have taken Detmer. She could have taken anyone. But she took Awoshikun because Awoshikun needed to do something. She needed to participate. Michael was like, yeah, I trust you with my life. Let's get this done. And she already knows Awoshikun's value. Because of when they went to New Eden and she and Pike and Awoshikun were the away team. Mm-hmm. So she fully trusts Awoshikun and knows how ingenious she can be, that she has a lot of ingenuity. And so she says she can get something done. You know she can get something done. And that's just it.
And there's just this like grace that she has about it too. And she's not a particularly chatty character. But there's this like very graceful power that she just kind of possesses. And it's again, it's breathtaking to me.
Like Grudge, she's a queen. She's a queen.
Yeah, she chooses her words carefully and when to speak and what to say. And that's the sign of extreme intelligence, is if you don't have anything to contribute to a conversation, just shut up and listen. If you have something to say or something meaningful to impart, then you do. And that's exactly, she chose her moments, just like in the fighting. Mm-hmm. And that takes a kind of dedication and a mindfulness of the situation to know when and where to act.
I really love how at the beginning of the third round, she looks at him, and then she just crouches down and stares at him and just waits. And she's got this look on her face like, bitch, it's on now. I was just playing before.
This is it now.
And points out how he's rude.
Yep. Yeah, loved that. Loved every bit of her in this episode. Mm-hmm. Loved every bit of Michael in this episode. Loved Vance in this episode.
I struggled a little bit with Michael and how she was selling the con of rematches and also her around the poker table. It's like I wasn't quite sure if she was trying to oversell or undersell, or it's like a little off to me. But I think that's because she was putting on a performance as Michael. So is Michael a bad actor? Sonequa is a great actor, but is Michael?
I think the point was to confuse. I think the point was to confuse. Yeah. I don't know if she's trying to undersell or oversell. Like, because everyone was just kind of like, what the fuck is she doing? You know?
Yeah, because there's this nervous laugh she does when she's doing the rematch, but that could be to belie the sense that they're losing and they're going to run out of money or something. I don't know.
It's all about, yeah, I think it's all about misdirection,
right,
to be honest. And confusion generally is the first way to cause misdirection. We don't have any on-screen story for that year that Michael was off with Book doing the things that they were doing. They were obviously doing things on that barge because obviously Maz knew them.
Yeah.
Had nicknames for them, Right Hook and Glowworm. I can't say Glowworm without laughing. It's just something.
Well, he had nicknames for everybody. And
yeah.
Maz or Maz, the way he just spoke in slang, and it was very gangster slang, and he's making all these connections. I mean, the Klingon at a disco, I think, was one of them or something like that. Just, and some of the references are like, I don't know what he's talking about, but you get it from context clues.
Yeah. Well, there was at one point, I think he was explaining the rules to the game, is like, be an Armus, you're going to get kicked out or something like that. And I'm just like, Armus.
Yep.
Armus.
It's like, this guy knows about the skin of evil? What?
I think everybody knows in the 32nd century.
That actor was really good.
That'd be like talking about Grendel now. You know, that's an old reference.
Well, they made it in Lower Decks.
Yeah. They made Armus, and they prank called Armus.
Yeah, but Lower Decks isn't like 900 years in the future.
They prank called Armus.
Just the best. I love Lower Decks so much. I love Star Trek so much.
But yeah, I could see Michael doing that to confuse or to unsettle, because it did me. I wasn't sure what she was attempting to do. You know,
it was very similar to the season premiere of season 3 when she gets gassed by the nerve agent and she's kind of loopy and whatever.
Oh, yeah.
She's going through a very similar type of over-exaggerated state, you know? And then while still in that state, she and Book have that little moment where they kind of connect and agree they're going to take out everyone around them. And they do, then they go and kick some ass. It's very similar. They had a similar exchange there too.
Right.
So I think there's just like, he kind of is the calm, stoic one. And she just puts on the little, oh, I'm just the, you know, girl, like the crazy, I don't really know what I'm doing, but whatever, you know. And it just somehow they make that work because they know each other so well.
Yeah.
And it just confuses the hell out of everybody else. They don't know what to make
of it. It's like that montage of them signaling each other during the poker game. I'm like, how do these two not see what those guys are doing?
That was a little bit
obvious. It's like the yawn and everything.
Yeah, but it wasn't the yawn that was the signal. It was what they did after the yawn. You know, it's like, and then tapping on their shoulder.
Or tapping chips on the table. It's like, okay, what are you doing?
It's interesting because I just saw Nightmare Alley, and there is a, you know, part of it, not to spoil anything, I won't spoil anything, but there's a carnival type of situation, carnies and all that. We see that in the trailer, but they talk about the different methods that they use for that type of communication with people. And so I thought it was cool to see that on Star Trek.
It's like a baseball game where it's a third base coach or something, just wiping nose and tipping hat.
Yes. And then we had the two players that were definitely from a German a cappella group. So.
Oh my God. I was like,
the dark circles. It's like, what are they? Evolved raccoons? Got those dark circles under their eyes.
I was like, these are some tough broads.
Gray hair.
Yeah. Anyone who has seen Pitch Perfect 2 will get my the German a cappella group joke.
I don't know if I've seen 2. If I have, it's been a very long time.
Yeah. Was they Das Sound Machine or something like that?
Das Sound Machine, yes. That was their
name. Das Sound Machine.
With Flula Borg leading that group. This
giant German comedian.
He's a stand-up comedian.
Rap, who knew?
I know. I didn't know he could sing either. All the hidden talents
and
of
dance.
Flula Borg.
Yeah, and he's funny, too.
Sorry,
so.
Tangent. Wow.
Well, his last name is Star Trek related, too.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So it's tangentially connected, and that's good enough for me.
Yep.
I'm Flula Borg.
Yep.
I can see him saying that. That's the funniest part. I love Flula. He's just endlessly cheerful.
I'm Zeven of Acht.
Zeven of Neun. Zeven von Neun.
You know that's what the additional audio is in other countries. Yep. It's like, yeah. Dubbed into German. Oh. Ooh. Ooh. Yeah.
Yeah. Watch the German dub version of horror movies. That'll do it for you.
I don't know if I can do that.
Like the German version of The Shining?
No, oof. Absolutely not.
Yeah, there's a band called Wumpskut, and it's basically Rudy Rotzinger. He's just like a DJ that turned into a musician and released his own stuff. But he'd take samples from German language versions of our horror movies, and The Shining's one of them, and woof.
Woof.
Also the German version of Soylent Green.
Mm-hmm.
Soylent Green is Menschenfleisch, Menschenfleisch!
Wir haben die Ewigkeit, um dein Fleisch kennenzulernen.
Yeah. Well, that's never leaving my head.
So poker.
Yeah, okay. Here's another thing. Changelings are back.
Yeah, I noticed. And that. We saw her their whatever actual original humanoid version when I was like, mm-hmm. Ooh, it looks pretty freaking similar. It's like a really cool, darker Discovery update of their look. I was like, oh, this is awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, they were very dark elf.
It turned into a tribble.
That was so funny.
Amazing.
It must have been a very, very heavy tribble. Depending on how they mass shift.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, how much does the weight shift when you are a changeling?
I don't know.
I don't know. That's never something that's been fully explained, nor will it ever be, because I think it breaks the laws of physics.
Right.
But yeah, it doesn't matter. But I just love, because, you know, we haven't heard from them in quite some time.
Mm-mm.
So that was pretty interesting that they were just suddenly there again. And it looked like a female.
Yeah.
Once they were in their true form.
It's so funny to me that they still can't, like, even when they do the human form, you still can't do it. They could do any other species. But for some reason, whenever they do human, they look like that.
It's like, why is the human so complex that you struggle to do it when you can be anything else in the universe?
I mean, really, is this that hard? It just,
compared to the other species that they were, you know?
Yeah.
Or maybe they're just, maybe they just don't like looking
maybe
like
it's humans. Because we're human, it looks wrong. And if they're transforming into a Klingon, and if you're a Klingon, you see it too?
No, because the Klingons did not know that...
Martok.
No. Thank you.
Yeah, no.
Gowron.
Oh, Gowron.
Gowron.
Gowron was a changeling.
Gowron,
they thought
away.
It was Martok, but it wasn't Martok.
Right.
But they thought it was.
Martok's the eye guy, right?
Yeah. No, Gowron's the eye guy.
Oh, the one that always...
You and your house.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. With the wide open
no,
eyes.
No, with the one eye.
Oh, with the one eye.
Oh, no, then that's
Martok. Oh, the eye patch.
Okay. I love them.
All the Klingons and their eye violence.
That one guy, what's his name? Robert something. And then, of course, J.G. Hertzler.
Oh, yeah. Martok. They do karaoke. Changeling. They do Klingon karaoke.
I know they do. I have seen clips. Robert Riley, that's it. It's like Book didn't think that Michael would actually... you know, try to stop him.
I mean,
he was just all kind of smiling and cute. And she was just like, do you not fucking understand how serious this is?
And how easy it was for me to find you. Like,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
When I was re-listening to our episodes, after I listened to the episode, I was like, maybe I was a little too harsh on Book and all that when we went around over and over about it and whatever. And like, Dave and I were sort of on the same team, closer anyway to you, than you, Brandy. But... I kept thinking maybe I was a little too hard on him. And then after this episode, I'm like, nah, I still feel the same way. In fact, I don't know that they will be together after this, even if he does change his mind.
Well, we don't know what's going to happen yet. It's difficult to say. It could be that they end up destroying the DMA, and that causes far more problems because species 10C comes to see what the hell happened, and maybe Book is the solution to everything.
Yeah, that's possible too. Yeah, like Michael know. Was.
Yeah, that's 10C. They might not know what damage they're causing.
Oh, I don't think they care.
I assume they yeah, they don't care, but to wipe out a person's entire civilization, basically.
That's like knocking over an anthill to them, probably.
Yeah.
They just don't care.
And I don't think that they're going to do, like, a book is a bad guy or a good guy thing. I think that they, because they do those shades of gray, they do those, like, it's okay, but it's not. They make us understand the perspectives of other people, even when they're making a decision that we think is wrong, Michael. And so I'm interested to see how they craft this story.
I'm not sure where they're going with it yet. And that's okay. I actually like that. I like not being able to guess. I like not being able to, you know, see everything that's going to happen because they've made it so grandly apparent. I think book might end up being part of the solution, but I have nothing on which to base that but a gut feeling.
Have you seen the next episode yet?
Mm-mm.
No. Oh.
No.
No. No, they were too busy giving us Picard screeners to give us a Discovery screener.
Hell yeah.
So, yeah. So let's talk about that lovely little scene with Stamets and Culper.
Oh my God. And
Stamets cleaning, even though the dot had already cleaned because it needed more zhuzh.
And he yelled
Culper, do it. Yelling at the dot.
No, I've already told you. Get
back
in
your charger. Get back in your dock.
He was just so perturbed. It was the cutest thing.
And then the dot was like,
Should have seen how many people on Twitter were like, they clean when they're stressed, and they identified with him so much in that scene. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh yeah, they feel seen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know that feeling. I don't do that anymore. That was back when I had when I didn't have my bipolar disorder under control. Yeah. So
yeah, when you're in a manic episode, it's like you just want to clean everything.
Yeah, not just clean everything, but just start like 5 million projects that I'm never going to finish. Also,
I'm going to reorganize this room. I'm going to move this furniture over here.
Yes, and then I just and then the high wears off, and I'm like,
then you're exhausted.
I can't put all this stuff back.
Yeah, but then you're just. Surrounded with a half-rearranged bedroom.
I'm just going to shove it all in a corner.
And then Dave walks in, what happened?
Mania. Yeah, that doesn't happen anymore. Just, I shouldn't think it's so cute the way Culper was acting, but it was.
Yeah.
Yep.
It was just adorable.
Well, it's very real.
It is very real, but just how he got
And he knows
so
what
mad.
He's doing. He knows it's a like this crutch, this coping mechanism of his, that he's doing it anyway.
And then Stamets had like major handled it. Like he
yes.
Step I was gonna say manned up, but I don't want that to appear
he therapisted up.
He stepped up and he handled that shit.
He husbanded up.
I was like, ooh. Mm-hmm. All right, sexy Stamets.
Yeah, just like we're all crazy, and you can't take on the responsibility of every single person on this ship.
He was sensitive. He was firm. Yeah. He was direct, but he was empathetic. I was like, oh, this is great.
I love this Stamets. Stamets has always been capable of this.
Yeah, he's becoming a daddy. It really changed him.
When we first see Stamets, he is working so hard on the spore drive, because with the spore drive, they can end the Klingon War. And so he's always got this goal of something that he was, you know, it was up to him, especially after the accident on the Glen, which obviously was them not having a navigator correctly attached, and it, you know, bent them around an axis like bodies should never be bent. He's always had this thing that he's had to do. And that's when he gets irritable. When he has something really important and he can't get it, he can't figure it out, or somebody's kidnapped his kids or whatever. Not kidnapped so much as just they went down to that ship planet thing.
Right.
In a season 3. Anyway, Stamets was, he used to be the same way. He handles things a lot differently now because of the things that he's been through. And so when he sees this behavior in Culper, it's just natural. He's like, oh, I've been here. I'm going to do for you what you would do for me. And that's what he does. And it's just such a beautiful thing to see because their relationship is so good.
And the admission that everybody's nuts right now.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody's stressed. Everybody's making poor choices. And you just have to live with it and move on and do the best you can to correct or work on atonement, forgiveness, realignment.
And so then they go to the holodeck and walk through some flowers. And my favorite part is after they leave, that dot comes right back out. Yes. And starts cleaning.
Zora got the last word.
Yep. Yes. Yes.
Well, how about Zora volunteering to do the tedious work?
That was nice. Because it would be so easy to forget that this other crew member is there around to help, you know, commissioned, whatever. Like, I liked that a lot.
Well, and she's finding ways to be useful. She's showing her worth. And I think she's still, in a way, trying to get Stamets on her side when he already is on her side. But I think she feels like she has to prove herself to him.
Like Tilly.
Yeah.
Zora is the new Tilly.
Zora is the new Tilly. Zora and Tilly are very different. And oh my God, I miss Tilly so much.
I was going to have to say that sometime during this episode. I miss her so freaking much.
So much. I'm in the middle of yet another rewatch of season 2 of Discovery. Because, you know, Beardy Spock. And there's so much Tilly. And it's so wonderful. It just made me miss her. But at the same time, it gave me a Tilly fix so that I could be not as upset when she's not in it.
Yeah, she shines so much in season 2. So much.
How great was it seeing the covers and the spreads for Out Magazine?
Oh my God, yes. Oh, yeah.
Mary Wiseman on there.
Mary Wiseman, Emily Coates, Jet Reno, Tig Notaro, Wilson Cruz, Anthony Rapp, you know,
Blue DeBarrio.
Yep. And and of course, Ian Alexander.
I just love how queer Star Trek finally is. Oh my God. Like, for real, for real. It's always been queer, but like.
I used to belong to this group that was supposedly the better, newer version of Star Trek ship posting. And despite the first rule being don't be an asshole, somebody had posted these covers. Like, so I guess Star Trek is gay now. And I'm just, and then there are people just going off with incorrect information and talking about, well, if Mary Wiseman's gay, why is she married to a guy? No, she is bisexual. And if you had been paying any attention to anything she said up until now, you would know that.
And also, it's none of your fucking business. Like,
yes, none of your fucking business. If someone identifies as queer, then fuck you. It made me so angry that I'm like, there was a part of me that's like, you should set them right. And I'm like, no, these are not people who are going to listen to, you know, the truth. They've already made up their minds. Mm-hmm. So I just left the group is what I did.
Good
and I'm
you.
Like, fuck you guys. And and there were people really being assholes in that. And yet all the comments were still there. Nothing had been moderated. Nothing had been done about anything. And I'm like, okay, well, obviously your rules don't actually apply when it's men talking about it. But
it's because men make the rules. Brandy, duh.
I know. I know. They still make the rules. It just really pissed me off because I was looking at all of the pictures, especially all the pictures of Mary, and I'm just like, oh my God, you're a queen. You're a queen.
I really hope we better freaking get some Laurel in Strange New Worlds. I need to check in with the Klingon homeworld in that time period. I need to see
We might. Laurel and I don't all know. Them. I don't know. I just don't know. I can't wait. I can't wait for that. It's like 2.5 months away, and I try not to think about it too much because I just get really, really overexcited. Like,
I can't
in the weirdest
even,
way.
Yeah, I cannot.
Yeah, just like, give me my Spock. Please just give me my Spock
right
now.
Give me my Picard. Shit.
Give me my everything. I just want all the Trek now.
Give me my more Lower Decks. Give me my more Prodigy. Okay, I get all of that this year? Amazing.
Yeah,
I get all new of episodes it. Of every single Star Trek franchise that exists right now in the same year. Bend me over and take whatever you want.
It's a great time to be a Trek fan. We already talked a little bit about how they figured out what the DMA actually was because of what wasn't there after it had been through an area of space and figured out about the Borgite.
You know, it's interesting that you brought up the Borg thing that your friends talked about in that the ship that passed through from the Prime universe into the Kelvin timeline was, according to the comic, the like prequel comic to that movie, was like Borg technology, and it was a mining ship at some point.
I really don't think this is Borg related. However, if it is tangentially, it must be a species that's far beyond the Borg and probably destroyed the Borg, if there were any in their galaxy, is my guess.
I find it interesting that they live in a literal bubble.
Mm.
That they're that isolated.
It's kind of like a shiny bean.
Yeah.
There's this big shiny oval.
Yeah.
Fluctuating.
That contains colors. What? A star and three orbiting
bodies.
Bodies.
It's big enough to contain a star and three orbiting bodies.
So that would be like our sun plus Mercury, Venus, and Earth.
Mm-hmm. It's big enough to, that area of space is big enough to hold those things. Whether or not that's what's actually there, couldn't tell you.
Can I say something?
Please.
And please feel free to edit this out if you think it's inappropriate or offensive or whatever. Please feel free to edit it out. But like, am I the only one that thinks vagina every time I see the DMA?
No, you're not the only one.
Okay, because every time I see it, I'm like, vagina. Like, I just, it's like I hear that in my head every time they show it. And it's like, am I the only asshole that's thinking that?
No, there are some areas reminiscent of a vulva, for sure.
Yes.
So, and there's the clitoris. And
I know. And I'm a person that's not had experience there, you know?
Yeah, you're not missing anything.
Some would disagree.
Maybe. My vagina's brought me nothing but trouble.
Oh, my God. That's the show title.
Nothing but trouble.
The world ain't nothing but trouble.
Trouble. But trouble. Yeah, no, it's not even so much my vagina as everything that's attached to it. My entire reproductive system has brought me nothing but trouble and anguish and pain. So, fuck you.
Ovaries, uterus, etc., etc. Yeah,
all that shit.
Fallopian tubes.
Yeah, all that shit. Terrible. Anyway, do we have any other things to say about this episode?
Vagina.
About the vagina. Dave, do you have anything else?
Vestibule, labia majora, labia minora, mons pubis.
Well, oh my God. Well, I'm looking at the runtime so far for our recording, and I'm like, did we skip stuff? Because we're usually like far beyond this timeline.
Yeah, we're speeding through this one.
There was a lot of what people might consider filler in this episode.
Dave?
Not a huge progression of plot points. There was some action, and that's not the kind of action that I mean. I'm not talking about pew-pews and people fighting. There just wasn't a lot of action. There wasn't a lot going on. Everything could be covered in more of a... What's the word I'm looking for here? I hate when I do this.
Shorter
more of
in time.
Shorter fashion, yeah.
Well, it's familiar territory when we're dealing, like what I said, a very tropey episode.
Sure.
That when you talk about an underground fighting ring, everybody knows what that is. When you're talking about, you know, the poker mm-hmm. game that's high stakes, everybody knows what that is. Trying to find some cheater in this casino, I think we could have used more outside shots of the barge, because we spent pretty much the whole thing in, you know, in the internal part of it. It'd been fun to like go outside every once in a while just to realize, yes, they're on this ocean planet or the ocean of a planet. And because I kind of forgot that they were on a barge.
Same. Yeah.
Every once in a while, I thought they were at a space station or another spaceship or on land. And so, you know, just every once in a while being reminded, yes,
the
this
camera
is a barge.
Back and forth a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah. Or just porthole windows. You look out and you see the sea, you know. That would have been a nice touch.
You don't do that with the casinos. You don't want people to know what time of day it is.
People know what time of day it is. That's very
true. You don't want that.
So that makes sense.
I agree. Just go up on deck. Feel the sea spray. It's fine.
Yeah. Yeah, just to get that sense of location.
There was one thing that I really liked that I didn't talk about. That was another thing that reminded me very much of TNG imagery. And that was when Owosha-Kun and Captain Burnham were in the shuttlecraft while it was at warp, and we saw the outside shot of it, and we also saw the warp effect, and we also saw her in the window. I really thought that was like a pretty shot, but it also reminded me of something we would have seen in Next Generation or something.
Yeah, except the shuttles looked like they were all from Tron Legacy, which I'm not complaining about.
Yeah, they've got the bluey run lights.
I love the white and blue. I really do.
Our neon chips.
One last thing that I'm going to say, and Book is obviously not thinking clearly because he should know how smart Michael is by now. And he didn't see it coming. He didn't see her coming. He didn't see her showing up and finding him. It's like, dude, you've known her for like a couple years now, maybe three at this point. And I think it's just he's so blinded by what he thinks he has to do that he's not really thinking clearly and taking everything into consideration.
In consideration. That might be the title. In consideration.
I didn't mean to say it that way.
You think, Book, for how long he's been around and with Michael, mm-hmm. whoever underestimates her, he should be like at the bottom of that list, but here we go.
Underestimate. Yeah. Michael Burnham, at your own peril.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, it's obvious that he's not thinking clearly, but this is a symptom of that he True. Didn't expect her to find him. And moreover, yeah. he will not have expected her to track him, so.
Yeah.
And we're not seeing any doubt on him. He's dug in. He's all in. As
yes and no, because there are some things that Tarkus said where Book was like, what?
Yeah.
What?
There were a couple moments. Yeah. There was a big one at the end. It was big to me.
It's like, you didn't already have this planned? Well, no, not this step in it. It's like, you didn't already have the material ready? No.
Yeah.
It's like, well, you could have told me that at any point. It's like, why? That's because that's your plan, not our plan.
Yeah.
Don't trust him.
Yeah, I don't trust Tarka. I'm never going to trust Tarka. And I can't wait for him to be revealed for the awful person that he is, because he's basically mm-hmm. already been revealed as that. And nothing he can say or do is going to redeem him in my eyes.
So. Yeah, in my opinion, if they do reveal that he had this great goal in place all along, I think that would have been a terrible twist. Mm. You know, rather than him being a villain, because he's been shown the villain all along. It's, I don't know why people are giving a benefit of a doubt. He's a white purely guy. A villain. He's written as villain.
Yeah, I think people look at it and they see, oh, they're obviously writing this because they're showing that white men are always like this. And so then somebody gets triggered by that. Like they're assuming that that's what the commentary is.
Yeah.
Which I don't think it is. I think he's just weird. An asshole, and he was a really good actor at playing that, and people also knew him as an actor, and there you go.
The asshole that he played on The Expanse was a very different kind of asshole. And so this is a very different role. Definitely different type of asshole. Very impressive, because sometimes assholes can be very one note. But no, mm-hmm. Sean Doyle bringing a whole different asshole to life. Asshole.
Yeah.
I'm having trouble speaking.
Asshole.
But there's something very similar about him in Lorca. And what they're trying to do.
Sort of.
And that's been pointed out by some people on Twitter as well, and not liking it, not liking that he has so many parallels to Lorca.
Well, I just mean in the fact that he's from somewhere else and he has another agenda. But we're aware of that. We weren't really technically aware of that in season one.
There were a lot of people who actually pegged that pretty early on.
I'm seeing more parallels between Tarka and Malcolm McDowell's character from Generations.
Mm, thank you.
Yes, yes, yes,
yes. Yes.
Is that he'll do anything to get what he wants, mm-hmm. and that could be killing millions or billions of people.
Mm-hmm. Time is the very essence in which we burn.
Yep.
Time is the fire in which we burn.
Oh, yeah. That's what I meant.
That's why it was so painful for Picard to hear that, because he just lost Rene and Robert.
Mm-hmm.
In a fire. That was fucking low.
That was devastating.
Terrible to do to him. Terrible. It's like, oh, well, we don't want to have to explain why he never goes back and sees them. Let's just put them to death in a fire. All right, then. Nothing else to say? We're all good?
I think we covered the episode from Nape to Naval.
All right. Well, it seems like this was an episode where we kind of had a bit of a break from the of the episodes so far. And now this is setting up the rest of the season for us. So mm-hmm. I think from here on out, it's going to be like, you know, like up to this point, we've been on a roller coaster that's clacking up. It's being cranked up to the top of that first big hill. And I think that the next episode, we're going to be rushing full speed down that hill until the end.
Well, we've only got three left, right? Yeah.
No, apparently there are six left.
What did was the number of episodes missed?
Yeah, apparently there's going to be 3 weeks, I think, where Picard and Discovery will be airing on the same night.
You're kidding me. Wow. I thought we came back and only had 4 episodes left.
I thought so too. I was set straight in an episode of The Unready Room, because that was the schedule that Paramount Plus put out.
Yes.
They showed the schedule of the episodes for the, you know, until like July.
Those fuckers.
That's amazing.
I know, right?
This was unusual episode to return to after a hiatus.
Yes.
You know, you'd think they'd come back to something a bit more bombastic than this. It's kind of a quieter episode.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's
comparatively.
I think it's like a palate cleanser in a way.
It's very character driven. Yeah. It's purely character driven.
Well, Washington definitely shines.
Yes.
Oh,
I think MVP of the episode.
She's the standout of the season for me so far. Yeah. And the scenes with her and Michael, to me so far, and I've only seen each episode once in season four, are by far the best scenes mm-hmm. of the season for me.
Mm-hmm. Agree.
Between two characters.
Yep. And the fact that those two characters were black women was just, yeah. Talk about passing the Bechdel test. Anyway, or however that's pronounced. I'm told that that's not actually the way it's pronounced, but I can't remember the way it should be pronounced, so we'll just...
Most people say Bechdel. I've heard Bechdel too, but I think it's Bechdel. I don't know.
Okay. But anyway, anytime Star Trek passes the Bechdel test is good for me, and it passes it pretty frequently.
Yeah, better than being a houseplant on, Next Generation, like some of the female characters were.
Yes, all of the female characters, if you will.
Just stand there in that corner and look pretty.
Yeah, they underutilized their women for sure. Mm-hmm. And there were almost no women on Enterprise. There were two women. Two! Yep.
But they were really cool women.
They were cool women, but T'Pol was the only one given something to do. Yeah. And Hoshi.
Until the Mirror Universe, and then, which wasn't really the same Hoshi.
See, I don't like those episodes at all. They are so misogynist and they gross me out.
They are.
Because I know what that asshole was thinking when he was getting to make out with Linda Park and how he brought it up to his wife just to be an asshole. Oh, yeah, I made out with Linda Park today. We had to do a lot of takes. Yeah. Fuck you, Vaughn Armstrong. That's never going to not be a sore point for me.
I have a 2022 prediction.
Okay.
Okay.
And it might be just more wishful thinking than a prediction, but I would like to see Jeffrey Combs. I predict that in some way, shape, or form, whether it's just a voice or in something, we will have a Jeffrey Combs something or another happening in 2022.
Okay, I hope for that too, because we already had it last year, but it was just the voice on Lower Decks.
Well, I'm thinking maybe we get an on-screen physical representation.
That would be
it's kind of tough with COVID protocols in place, but hopefully they will get Jeffrey Combs on at some point.
Yeah, because it's much stricter in Canada than it is here, as it should be. It should be as strict here as it is in Canada, frankly. But, you know, no, we don't care how many people die, so it's fine. Yeah, nobody cares that children under 5 are now getting really sick and dying from Omicron. Great job, guys. Great job. Anyway, shall we move on to Hey, What Do You Like?
There's a turn.
I know.
Ahead.
Before I got bogged down in things, I just had to take
it. Did you want to go first again?
No, I'm not going. I'm going last.
No, you're not going first?
I'm going last this time.
Okay.
So
right. Who's going first then?
Christopher. Darling, why don't you go first?
Well, I like a lot of things. At least for the time being, introducing my dad to the new era of Trek is on hiatus until I go back and visit them again. But what started off as only going to be watching season one of Picard together ended up being season one of Picard, season one of Discovery, Short Trek season one, season two of Discovery, Short Trek season two, and the first three episodes of season four. Three. And he watched the first episode of Lower Decks, didn't really like it, but he watched the first few episodes of Prodigy, enjoyed it. My mom watched it too, and she really likes Prodigy.
Nice.
So we did all of that. Forget Me Not in season 3, episode 4, is one of my favorite Trek episodes of all time after it aired for many, many reasons, not simply because I love the Trill. But for so many representational reasons. And I left right before my dad watched that episode. Before we watched that episode, because I knew because of conservative differences on the other side of the table, there might be some grumbling or some talking or whatever. So he actually watched it without me after I had left and said he liked it, but we didn't really talk about what it meant.
It probably went over his head.
It may have, but very few things do. He's a very, very, very intelligent man. In fact, I want to say this in the most, you know, I'm a gay man and
very supportive of all of the shades and colors of the LGBTQ plus community. 100% an advocate and a fighter for all of us, and try to empathize with even those in my community who are not like me and have different experiences. And I've done a lot of work in that area too, professionally. My dad was referencing Adira after episode, what did we get her in? Episode 2, I think. Mm-hmm. When did we get them in episode 2? We got Adira in episode 2 when they were being misgendered. Right, basically, right. But sort of we were on the journey with them and with the actor Blue themselves. And my dad started referencing Adira and said, and used both pronouns. He said, you know, well, what she's trying to, well, I'm not sure. Is it he or she? Like he was like, I don't know what, he could not tell this person's gender. And it wasn't out of ignorance or hatred or anything like that. He just clearly was like, I am unsure. My idea, my construct of the gender binary is being called into question here by this actor. And I thought, wow, so he's even aware that this is a thing, that this is real, even though he doesn't know anything about the actor. He doesn't know anything about the story yet, because that doesn't happen till later, until she says that they're they. He hasn't gotten any of that yet, but he was in his own way challenged by the construct, you know, the social construct of the gender binary. So I'm trying to express this in a way that doesn't come across, you know, hurtful or offensive or insensitive, because I think that it was actually cool that he, on some level, recognized that being gender non-binary is a real thing. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, in his own way, that was processing. That's what I like. Did that come across at all insensitive or anything?
No, okay. Not at all. Yeah. I think we picked up exactly where you're trying to convey.
Okay, cool.
Okay, I was kind of struggling to think of something that I like. And I got to say that Brandy has got us eating HelloFresh. So we're getting food delivered to us. It's, you know, non-processed. It's, you know, from the farm to us. And fresh produce. And we all have to cook it up, which is a lot of mess. But the result is so tasty.
Mm-hmm.
We've had some amazing meals. I think the only one we kind of messed up on was one with potatoes, because the potatoes went kind of cold and they were a little runny. And I think that was on my end.
Yeah, I'm not blaming you.
Not cooking them properly.
I get HelloFresh.
But everything else we've had is, you know, some of the best food we've ever had. And it kind of indicates how the rich eat, because they don't eat the processed stuff. They eat the fresh stuff.
I really like HelloFresh. They should be a sponsor for our program.
That would be nice. They totally should.
Yeah,
we should monetize. Get like a discount code.
Ooh, that first discount code you get is pretty awesome.
It is amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, several free meals.
Yes.
Yeah, so we're eating better, eating fresher, and it is tasty stuff. Like what we had today, prosciutto and
prosciutto penne and chicken with peas and parm.
Yep,
a lot of peas in there.
Yeah, it was so good.
We'd never had prosciutto before.
Decadent good.
Seriously, it was kind of annoying to make, but once we had made it and I started eating it, I'm like, oh no, I would absolutely go to the trouble to make this again. Absolutely. It was fun.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Tasty stuff.
Mm-hmm. So good. Mushu pork bowls tomorrow.
Yep, we're trying to save the one we thought was best for last.
They've all been great.
Yeah, they've all been great. Yeah. The penne was really good.
Mm-hmm. And just made me think of Eddie Izzard when we were eating it, because she does this whole thing about the guest star canteen, the Death Star canteen, and I'll have penne a la arrabbiata. You want peas with that? You don't put peas with penne. Just
unless you stuff them up the penne tubes, and that would be weird.
Yeah, she has just go find Eddie Izzard and watch or listen to her stuff. You won't be disappointed. Okay.
Somebody did a Lego version of that particular bit.
Which was so great. It animated with Legos.
With those Star Wars Legos of Darth Vader going, this tray is wet, this tray is wet, this tray is wet. Did you dry these in a fucking rainforest? This one is wet, this one is wet. Why, by the power of the Death Star, can I not find a tray that is dry?
That sounds like a Robot Chicken thing.
It does.
Yeah, but it's definitely an Eddie Izzard thing.
Yeah, it was his encore, I think, to one of them. I think Dressed to Kill, maybe?
I don't think it was. No, that was not the encore. And I, it may have been Dressed to Kill. I think it was Circle.
Yeah.
It was either Dressed to Kill or Circle, but I'm 99% sure it was Circle. That was right. The closer. So, yeah. Okay, what do I like? I'm like so many things. I'm going to go traditional here. I like the new Amazon series Reacher because I am a fan of the Jack Reacher books. And yes, they did a couple of movies with Tom Cruise, who does not in any way physically resemble the character. And a big thing about the character that is part of the stories is that he is a huge man. He is very tall. He is very fit. And people often underestimate him because he only speaks when he wants to. So they just underestimate him as some big, dumb giant. But he's the smartest person in the room. And
yeah, because he was a former investigator.
Yeah, he worked for the military police in investigations and ran his own unit. And so they got Alan Ritchson to play this character. And I knew who he was, but I didn't know who he was. Because I'm looking at him during the trailer of that they put out before the show dropped. I'm like, he looks familiar. Where have I seen him before? And then right before the show was about to drop, which they dropped all the episodes at once, there are 8 episodes in the season 1, which basically cover the entire first book that Lee Child wrote. Turns out he's the same guy that played Hank/Hawk of Hawk and Dove in DC's Titans on HBO Max. But because he's such a good actor, I did not put 2 and 2 together. I was super excited to see him do this other role. He did not disappoint. I think the acting was absolutely brilliant. I think that the action was very well done. The mystery was good. Of course, this is actually one of the books that I had read, and there were some things that went differently. There was like a person who got killed at a different time, and I'm like, wait, what? Now I don't know how this is going to go. Well, I figured it'd probably end up the same. If you have read Jack Reacher books, definitely check out the series. If you like a good action series, definitely check out the series. If you like Alan Ritchson, I keep putting an I in there that isn't. Check out the series. He's a much better actor than I think people give him credit for, because, again, they're just like, oh, big, big, muscly guy. So yep. He is a beautiful
It's man. Kind of the same thing with John Cena in Peacemaker. Is this underestimating, oh, he's just a wrestler, he's just this big guy, and then you see him acting, you're like, holy crap.
Yeah.
He's really putting in a performance. Also, if you like the bad guys getting theirs and justice actually happening in the world, which we need more of, then Reacher is a series for you because it's very satisfying.
Extremely, extremely. It really satisfies that sense of justice that is really a big part of me.
Yeah, because Jack Reacher is, he does the right thing. That's his whole character. He's like... chaotic good, lawful good, probably chaotic good.
And he's a hobo.
Yeah.
Like, he just doesn't have a home base anymore. He spent so much time in the military and obeying a bunch of rules, and now he just wanders the country doing what he wants, when he wants.
Kind of like the Hulk.
Yeah, but the Hulk didn't really do that because he wanted to. Yep. He did it because he had to. Reacher does it because he wants to. So.
He's like Gray Hulk when the Hulk was intelligent.
Okay, that works. Yep. So, yeah, thumbs up for that. All right. It is now that time. Where can people find you? Go date. We'll start with you.
You can find me mostly at Twitter at Dark Corner Cast. That's me linking to most other things, including the Dark Corner podcast that I record sometimes with Brandy when she's not too busy. You can find me here co-hosting the show. You can find me on SoundCloud. The Dark Corner podcast, also DJ Evil Dave. I have a Valentine's Day mix that will probably be gone by the time this releases, but I should have the EBM Day mix up until the 24th of February, and EBM is electronic body music. It's a style of music that was founded in Belgium with bands like Front 242. I've recorded or put together, compiled, mixed, and is kind of a primer of a lot of EBM bands, the more popular ones and more indicative of the sound. So I'm gonna have that up pretty soon.
Sweet. Christopher darling,
you can find me posting pictures of my dog and my
woof
musical stuff and thirst traps
on Instagram at CD Littlefield.
Your abs. Abs and
his
chest.
His abs are impressive.
Depends on the day.
Yeah.
Depends on what I ate.
Yeah.
That is true. I know that feeling. And you can find me on Twitter at Brandywine12. That's the easiest way to figure out what I'm, you know, doing next. When Strange New World starts, Boldly Go will return. We're probably going to do an episode before that. But yeah, this is going to be...
With Suzanne?
Oh, I did... With Suzanne, yeah.
Yay!
I know. We're really looking forward to it. And yeah, that's...
Yeah, you guys recorded like the funniest Janeway ever.
I wouldn't say that. I was just going to say that I did recently do an episode of The Janeway about the episode Threshold.
Oh.
Yeah.
Did you tell them that I got the Threshold Alien Playmates toy?
I did not.
I did like a year ago.
I did not tell them. But because I had forgotten until it was too late. Unfortunately, whenever I am around Liam, I become just obscenely dirty in everything I say and think. And I don't know if it's because that's just the way I really am or what, but yeah, that episode is absolutely not safe for work. There were some people who responded really positively to that, and I appreciate that. One person said they just wanted a track of my laughter. And another person said that we made them laugh so hard that they almost fell off the sofa.
Oh,
so,
my God.
Yeah, the thing around Paris Delight alone is just so funny.
Yeah, you'll just have to listen to the episode if you want to know what that means. So, So yeah, that's where I am. So until next time, keep calm and poker on. I don't even know why I said that. I just I don't even know.
Keep calm and all in?
Sure, but that doesn't really, it doesn't fit the meter of it. So it's, it doesn't matter.
Oh,
basically.
Wow, chicken?
Oh, whoa. Yeah. Oh, wow. Oh, wow, chicken.
Oh, wow. Oh, whoa, chicken.
Keep on and all in on.
Yeah.
Right, keep calm and all in
all
on.
All in on?
All in on.
Isn't that a program for alcoholics?
All in on. All in on. Like, keep doing all in. Keep going on with the all
keep
in stuff.
Going all
yeah,
in.
Keep going all in.
All
in
and on. And on. Q and on.
Thank you for coming to this workshop.
We're ready for Broadway.
Oh, okay, then. And just hold on to your drawers, folks. And we will see you next time. I'm going to just keep saying see. I don't care anymore. So that we can find out what the future holds. Recording.
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 Da-da-da-da. Fanfare.
Honk.
I hope it doesn't get noisy out there. We've had some noisy neighbors lately.
Well, now that I'm back home, it may be a little noisy. You may hear some ambient something.
That's okay. That's what noise reduction is for. It usually does a pretty good job.
Can't you tell New York to shut up?
Well, New York is across the river, so technically...
Okay. Ah, you
but
can.
It still sounds the same.
Ah.
Yeah.
Yes, well, we can't even tell our own neighborhood to shut up, Dave, so, you know, there we are.
Yeah, and we're a broken street in Ogden.
Yeah. It's like we have, you can't get to us directly from the street that we're named for. Like, our part of the street is half a block, and you can only get to it from another street.
Really?
But the rest of the street just keeps going up the hill and is unbroken.
Yeah, we have two cul-de-sacs near us.
Yes. And they named them incorrectly.
Yeah.
Because the street where the cul-de-sacs are, that's called, what is that called?
Orchard.
Yeah. But they named the cul-de-sac where Orchard and Darling Street intersect, they named that one Orchard Circle. And then they named the other one that's actually on Orchard, Darling Circle.
Oh my God.
What the fuck? How stupid is that?
Doxed ourselves.
Oops.
Not that it matters.
Yeah, well, they still don't know which one, which house is ours, unless they come in the backyard.
Yeah, maybe that's a good thing, actually. I mean, not for Amazon, but But maybe for anyone that is Googling where to find Brandy and Dave.
Where to find us.
Well, you know.
It's not like we have anything Star Trek outside the house.
No, just in the back windows. I'm working on having a life-size Mr. Worf standing guard in the backyard.
Mr. Worf.
Inflatable Enterprise.
Ooh.
Oh, if only.
What about like a DS9 bouncy house?
Yes. That would be cool. I want that so much now.
A Founder's swimming pool. Just orange goo. Glittery orange goo.
Not glittery, shimmery. There's a difference.
Kind of glossy.
Oh, yeah, that's my dream now. We're going to redo the backyard, Dave, and we're going to put in a Founder's pool and a DS9 bouncy house. I mean, I don't think you can have one without the other now.
I don't think so.
Nope. Yeah. It's going to all be Deep Space Nine themed.
Ooh, and the slide into the pool can be like the wormhole.
Ooh. Nice.
This is perfect.
I love it.
I want this so much. It's never going to happen. I can't possibly afford that.
We'd be famous for having it.
Absolutely.
Never going to happen.
We'd be in Trekkies 3. Was that an In Vogue reference?
Yes.
Yes, it was.
Oh, my goodness. My favorite girl.
Never going to get it. Okay. Anyway, so let's begin. My apologies. We're not even into the podcast proper yet. Okay.
That's okay. We got our bonus footage.
Bonus footage.
For all you viewers.
All you viewers out there watching us as we record. Thank God they're not. Okay. Here we go. Okay. Yes, we're both back.
Okay. Oh, now it tells me my internet is unstable.